You know, it kills me. You know, we think that we can hide stuff from God. Just, I mean, you know, I'll be honest with you. During my devotion time, I just get raw. I get raw. And I say, Lord, you know every inch, every ounce, and there's no need of me trying to perfume it up, sugarcoat it, or make it look any kind of way, because you see through all the veneer, you see through all the facade, and you see this raw man called Bill Glaze. You see me. So I'm just going to lay it bare. I'm just going to lay it bare right before you.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Layman's Bible Institute and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. Today, Dr. Glaze will conclude his message titled, A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet.
Praise and worship songs on my iPad. And sometimes it comes to my time of praise. And I might read a praise in the scripture, Psalm 150, Psalm 148. And then there are other times that I'll just go and put a praise song on. And that during my prayer time, I'll just sit back and whatever the choir or whatever the individual is singing, I'll just say, Lord, I agree with that. Lord, that's where my heart is right now. And I will worship God as I listen to that song. And then you might have a song of thanksgiving. You might have a song of confession. Whatever it is that you have, something that will aid and assist you in your prayer time. A songbook. And something that is essential, something that is very important, is that you have an expectant spirit. That you've got to come to God expecting. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall see God. That word in the Greek, there are two words for poor. One is the word panace, and that means, you know, somebody that might have a difficult time making ends meet. You know, they're not on the street, they're living in a house, they got clothes, they got food, they're just having a difficult time making ends meet. And then there's the word patokos. And that refers to that beggar in Luke chapter 16 who was so poor that somebody had to bring him and literally put him down at the gate of the rich man. And he had to fight for the crumbs that the dogs were after. Jesus didn't say, blessed are the panace in spirit. He said, blessed are the patokos. Blessed are those who are abject beggars. Blessed are those who don't have two pennies to rub together. Blessed are those that are empty and come to the Lord and say, nothing in my hands I bring, simply to the cross I cling. That you got to come with that expectant spirit. Lord, if you don't speak, I will leave here disappointed today. Lord, if I don't connect with you on some level, I will leave here feeling empty today. Oh, when you come with that expectant spirit, I find that every time God will not disappoint you. That the Lord will open up the windows of heaven and he will allow the messages from the scripture. He will allow, you know, when you have an expected spirit, you can get a blessing out of the book of Deuteronomy. And so-and-so begot so-and-so and so-and-so begot so-and-so. God will bless you in the begots if you have an expectant spirit. And so these are some things that will enhance your quiet time. Back in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6, we see, first of all, that this quiet time is a time of spiritual participation. A time of spiritual participation. In chapter 6 and verse 1, Isaiah records these words. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. When the prophet was raptured into the presence of God, now there's some debate as to whether it was literally or whether it was in a vision. You know, I'm not here to argue that point this morning. All I'm here to say is that he had a connection with God, that he made contact with God. And as this powerful connection took place, Isaiah, what did he do? He participated by submitting to the divine presence of God. And what did God do? God participated through a powerful revelation of himself. See, I'm talking about, you know why a lot of people don't want to spend time with God? They would rather do other things. They would rather rush out and not spend this time, because this is not what, you're not getting this right here. You're not submitting to the divine presence of God. And then you're not seeing the powerful revelation of God. In the book of James, we don't have to turn there. Maybe you could put it up on the screen. James 4:8. And as we think about this scripture right here, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. That if you draw close to God, the promise is that he will draw close to you. The spiritual participation that once God shows up, then you got to move close to him. You got to draw close to God. There's no intention on your part, if there's no desire on your part, then the chances are that God is not going to show up. Let me share with you a couple powerful things that I saw in the life of Christ. These are some powerful things. The first thing that I want, and I'm going to come back to this spiritual participation. I'm coming back to that. But Jesus not only practiced this, but he preached it. First of all, we see that he practiced it. The spiritual participation, right? In Mark chapter 1 and verse 35, and in the morning, rising up a great while before day, he went out and departed into a solitary place, and there he prayed. He connected with God. What was his habit? He made it a priority. He made it a priority. You won't participate with God unless you make it a priority. In the morning, rising up a great while before day, he had a place, a solitary place, a place where he could go, a place where he could meet. Jesus said, go in the closet. We got people coming out of the closet. Jesus said, go in the closet. He had a place and he had a purpose. What was his purpose? And there he prayed. Jesus practiced it, but not only did he practice it, he also preached it. Go to that next slide. He also preached it. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 6. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut the door, pray to the Father which is in secret, and the Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. Look at the four devotions that Jesus gives us here. First of all, there's the devotion of a period, that you have to devote a period of time. He said, when you pray, not if you pray, or happenstance comes upon you and you pray. He said, when you pray. When, that's an indicator of time, that there has to be a time. There has to be a devotion of place. Enter into thy closet, a devotion of place. You know, where is your closet at? I don't think you're necessarily talking about a broom closet or a dish closet. What he's saying is wherever you can go and connect with God, the devotion of privacy, the devotion of privacy. Shut the door. Well, what does he mean when he says shut the door? He means don't be distracted. Don't allow anything to distract this time. Remove the distraction. And then we see the devotion of power. Pray, pray. Don't read about prayer. Don't study about prayer. Don't talk about prayer. But he says pray. So what do we learn from Isaiah? We learn that if we are going to have a quiet time that's worth being quiet for, that there has to be spiritual participation. What did James say? James said, draw close to God, and he'll draw close to you. How do we draw close? We draw close by following the practice of Christ. We draw close by following the words of Christ. Isaiah, he drew close to God in the year that King Uzziah died. He connected with God. Yeah. In the year that King Uzziah died, he connected with God. And for us, we draw close. Unless we participate with God, we're not going to meet with him. Look in Amos, the book of Amos, chapter 3. Some of you may have to lick your fingers and unstick those pages there. Those of you who have electronic devices, you don't have to do that. You can just find Amos and go right there. All right, Amos chapter 3 and verse 3. Amos says here, can two walk together except they be agreed? Can two people meet? You know, sometimes my wife, you know, she gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and goes walking. And sometimes I'll go with her and, you know, we'll get to the track and we'll see about 4 or 5 cars drive up. And people get out of their cars. And then all of a sudden, there's like 4 people walking in a group. There's 3 people walking in another group, just walking around the track, talking. How did they get there? Can two walk together except they be agreed? Somewhere along the line, they said, hey, we're going to be here at this time and this place. Let's come together. Let's do it. Now, whether they do that every day or that's just understood that every day they're coming around the same time to the same place. Amos says, can two walk together except they be agreed? Can God and the worshiper walk together unless there be an appointment? Sometimes we have those impromptu times, right? We have those impromptu times where, you know, we spontaneously might wake up in the middle of the night and spend time with God. Sometimes we may have that extra moment where we are able to steal away and get some time with God. But those moments are rather infrequent. The times that we can count on are the times that we have designated, the times that we have dedicated, the times that we have set aside and said that we agree, Lord, that at this time and at this place we are going to walk together. If you're going to have a quiet time that's worth quiet being quiet for, there has to be spiritual participation. The second thing that we see as we look at this passage in Isaiah is that if you're going to have this type of quiet time, that there has to be a time of spiritual prostration. And that is a time of worshiping God. Back in Isaiah, he lets us know what this is like. He says that he saw the Lord high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. And above it stood the seraphim. Each one had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face, with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door were moved at the voice of him who cried, and the house was filled with smoke. We have a couple things going on here. First of all, this act of worship was a result of him getting a glimpse of God. And then it was a result of him getting a glimpse of true worship. First of all, he got a glimpse of God, that he saw God. And as he saw God, something happened in him. That in our quiet times, are you seeing God? Are you seeing the glory of God as it's revealed in the scriptures? You know, it blessed my heart last night that at the end of the show, they sang the grace. They sang about the grace of God, amazing grace. And it was powerful. And I know where I was at, there was not a dry eye beside me. When we sang those verses of amazing grace, that people just began to weep last night. And what happened? What happened? They got a glimpse of God. They got a glimpse of the grace of God and how that we were wretches undone. And even Isaiah, he goes on to say, woe is me, for I am undone. And they got a glimpse of the majesty of God, the power of God through his grace, and their hearts were touched. Maybe we can't do that every day, but there should be days when we are in the presence of God and our hearts are touched and we begin to weep because we got a glimpse of the glory of God. There may be times when we are in the presence of God and we just begin to be joyful because we got a glimpse of God. And the problem is that this is not the experience of the saints. It's not the experience of the saints. We don't have this. Why is it? Why is it that we can't capture that experience that we had last night, and every time we see the glory of God, we begin to weep or we begin to tremble or we become joyful? Something happens in us when we see the glory of God. Isaiah saw the glory of God, and his quiet time was revolutionized. The second thing that we see here is that he got a glimpse of true worship. Right, right. He got a glimpse of true worship. Don't get me to preaching up here. I was trying to teach. Now I'm going to have to start preaching. He didn't get a glimpse of some phony saints standing up shouting. He didn't get a glimpse of some people that were running around the church hollering and shouting for God and their heart was somewhere else. He got a glimpse of the seraphim, these beings that were created 24/7 to cry out to God, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." He saw what worship was like. You know, it grieves my spirit sometimes when people try to get somebody to worship the way that they want them to worship. That if you praise, go ahead and praise. You go ahead and do your thing. But don't think that people are not praising because they're sitting there quiet. And that the power of God is ministering to their spirit just as powerful as that one who's making all the noise. I don't see here why Isaiah got up and started shouting. I don't see here why Isaiah got up and started running around. What do we see here? We see a prophet in deep meditation who's being ministered to by the Spirit of God, because now he is experiencing and he is seeing what true worship is like. He is not only seeing what it looks like on the outside, but he's seeing it when worship is connected to the heart. And we see so much worship that's not connected to the heart. That's just a show. You know, the song said, you know, was it just a show? When you came, was it just a show? Would to God that if we are connecting with him in this spiritual prostration that our hearts are worshiping him, whether we stand up and raise our hand or whether we sit down with our hands folded and meditate, that we are worshiping the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He got a glimpse of God's glory. He got a glimpse of what true worship was like. And then I'll close with this one and finish next week. It's a time of spiritual personalization, a time of spiritual personalization. Look what he says in verse 5. Then said I, "Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." What was his response? He personalized it. He personalized it. He didn't say, first and foremost, "Woe is everybody else." No, he looked at, he said, "It's not my mother, not my father, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer." He wasn't one of these Christians that sat in church while the preacher was preaching and put up his spiritual umbrella and let the bricks of the gospel bounce on their neighbor. He took his umbrella down and he said, "Let it hit me. Let it hit me square on the head. Let it hit me right between the eyes. It's me. It's me." And you know, when you get a glimpse of God, you begin to see your own sinfulness. When you get a revelation of the glory of God, you begin to see what type of individual you really are. Can you put up on the screen Job 40 and verse 4? Job 40 and verse 4. Job was looking for God, and he cried out and said, "Where is God? I wish that he would show up." And you know something? Be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you ask for, because God showed up. And when God showed up, look at Job's response. "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand over my mouth." You know what he said? "I'm going to stop running my mouth." But then he says, "I'm vile." When God showed up in all of his glory, Job said that "I'm vile." And when we get this time with God, this spiritual time that we spend in the presence of God, it ought to be a time when we focus on ourselves. Yeah, I'm going to spend some time praying for my loved ones. Yeah, I'm going to spend some time praying for my church. I'm going to spend some time praying for my enemies. But there is a time when it's just going to be me and God. And I'm going to, you know what they call that, right? I'm going to fess up. I'm going to fess up. You know, it kills me. You know, we think that we can hide stuff from God. Just, I mean, you know, I'll be honest with you. During my devotion time, I just get raw. I get raw. And I say, Lord, you know every inch, every ounce, and there's no need of me trying to perfume it up, sugarcoat it, or make it look any kind of way, because you see through all the veneer, you see through all the facade, and you see this raw man called Bill Glaze. You see me. So I'm just going to lay it bare. I'm just going to lay it bare right before you. Lord, if I gossip, I'm laying it bare before you. Lord, if I said something I shouldn't have said, I'm laying it before you. If I did something, Lord, I'm just laying it before you, because you already see it. And see, I'm going to talk about it next week, but what happened in the next verse? See, when he fessed up, what did God do? God sent that angel to bring the coal and cleanse him. You can't get cleansing unless you fess up. You're just going to get up from your quiet time and just walk away with that same old dirty sin that you got down there with. I remember when I was in Virginia, I had a little VW Volkswagen. It was a yellow one. My kids called it the Beetle Bug. And for some reason, that weekend, I didn't drive the car. And when I got up to go to work on Monday morning, I looked in my car and my radio was gone. Somebody took my radio. I mean, it was just an empty hole right there where my radio was. And I said, wow. I said, man, when I get to work, I'm going to have to call the police and let them know that somebody stole my radio. So I get to work, and as soon as I get there, my wife calls. And she said, did somebody take your radio? And I said, yeah, how do you know? She said, because there was a man down at the police station. He stole a bunch of stuff, and he went down there and turned himself in. He fessed up. Would to God that everything would fess up, right? He fessed up. I said, I told my wife, I said, you know, it was like, you remember when the Philistines, I think it was, had the Ark of the Covenant, and then God sent them tumors? And they said, look, man, we don't want this, right? We don't want this. I said, I don't know, man. Maybe the guy got some tumors or something. I don't know. He stole the preacher's stuff. But what did he do? He fessed up. And sometimes we just need to fess up. We just need to fess up. And that's what this quiet time, it's that time of fessing up. At what other time in the day are you going to fess up to God? Most of the rest of the time, you're going to be too busy to do anything. But it's during this quiet time that you fess up to the Lord. And so we're trying to motivate you to have a quiet time that's worth being quiet for. I'm going to say some more things. I got three more points. We're going to deal with those next week. But as I close today, let me turn your attention to Psalm 32, I believe it is, the 32nd Psalm, as we talk about this personalization, this time before the Lord. Psalm 32. And David says, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven. 32 and verse 1. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom the Lord imputeth not iniquity, nor in whose spirit there is no guile. He said, when I didn't confess, when I didn't fess up, when I kept silent, my bones became old through my roaring all day long. He said that when I didn't confess, I just started aging. He said, it seemed like I was aging quick, fast, and in a hurry. And then in verse 4, he says, and all my energy, all my vitality, it just dried up. For day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture was turned into the drought of summer. I was around other people, and they were having a good time, but I just stared off into space because my moisture was dried up. My vitality was gone. It was zapped. I was deflated. He said, I acknowledge my sin unto thee, and my iniquity have I not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgression unto the Lord, and thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. He got some relief. And that's why he said in verse 1, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven. This quiet time is a time of spiritual personalization where we come into the presence of the Lord.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet, Part 2. If you would like to request an audio copy or the notes of today's teaching, A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request A Quiet Time That Makes It Worth Being Quiet. Or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view or download many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. As we conclude today's broadcast, let me remind you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.